So the question is, where does gait resistance matter? So back when we covered overlap loss, we simplified the analysis a little bit by saying IG was just a constant current. Okay? And generally, that's not the case. Generally, we have a kind of voltage type output on our gait driver. But we also made this comment that when I look at overlap loss, I look at my VGS versus time, overlap loss kind of occurs in this region where my VGS is relatively constant, might be between 3 and 5 volts. So my current is going to be whatever I selected for the gate driver voltage, maybe 15 volts minus somewhere between 3 and 5 divided by R. Okay. And I said, you know, kind of a valid approximation to just say this is just example numbers here, 3 volts, 5 volts. Say that my drive voltage is 15. My gate resistance is 1 ohm. For the overlap time calculations, I would probably just say during the entirety of the overlap time, my IG is determined by kind of 15 volts, 1 ohm, 5 volts. That would give me 10 amps. Right. In reality, it changes from 3 to 5 during the first part, so the current will change a little bit from 12 amps to 10 amps. But most of the time is spent here, and that's a relatively small change. I can just say, okay, IG looks like a constant 10 amps during the overlap time. And then during this time, it'll die off, right? It'll drop down, and when VGS approaches 15, my real curve will kind of do this. Gives you a handle on something to approximate the overlap losses. Okay. Certainly, if you wanted to, you could actually go through and solve how the current changes from 12 amps to 10 amps in that time and extend the overlap time a little bit for that. I think this is probably a valid approximation. Had a lot of people asking me about how does it play into gate charge loss? What do you think? Doesn't, right? Doesn't matter what this resistance is. We've got this kind of pair of gate capacitances. You charge them up, and then you short out all that energy. The energy is going to be the same no matter what. And QV goes in, QV gets dissipated. Okay. Anything else you want to ask? Or body diode conduction. That one I was intentionally a little bit vague on. It's up to you in this, because I said, you know, subject to a few constraints, the switching signals are yours to decide. So without anything limiting you, what you can say is, all right, I'm going to time my gate drive signal so that as soon as the voltage on this device reaches zero, I'm crossing the threshold. So there's practical limitations to that. If you want to put that in a circuit, can you really time that out perfectly? Probably not. You may be able to get close enough that body diode conduction is negligible.
But during the time that you're turning up one of the devices, the current is decreasing in that device and going to the body diode of the other.
If you're talking about during actual overlap time, during turn off, so during that time, your losses are really fixed. If your low side device is stuck in saturation, adding body diode conduction, that isn't going to change the equation significantly, right?
But then, that conduction of diode, there is a reverse recovery problem. And you turn on the other. That's what I couldn't figure out how to justify between the reverse recovery.
Reverse recovery. Is a big deal when I have this diode on and I turn on this set, okay? Because I'll get the full VDC applied across that set while the diode remains on. It exists, but is not such a big factor when I'm talking about this device. Because now, if this diode's conducting and I turn on this device, in order to get the voltage drain to source from DS down to IR, I will have to alter the conduction characteristics of that diode. But I'm not locking a full VDC across this device as I turn it on. I'm kind of locking it at diode conduction and steadily just commutating over from, it's in terms of the FET, over from the diode conduction path over to the channel. There are some losses associated with that, non-zero, but very rarely are they significant enough to be taken into account. Anything else? Okay. But we'll move on. So last class we were talking about this synchronous buck state plane, and we saw through just an example. So what would happen if I shut off the low side device and then just let the circuit ring out? We found that I've got this ringing and I'm clamped by body diodes on either side that causes some diode conduction, some energy loss, and I eventually get down to this steady state ringing in the center here. A comment I wanted to make here, not something that we're going to really analyze in this class, the state plane kind of falls apart, but this circle is what's formed when I have a lossless ringing. I have no energy loss as energy is transferred back and forth between L and C. It's not going to be the case in any real circuit. Any real circuit will have some resistance of both elements. If I have a, see what color haven't I used? UT orange. If I have a lossy ringing on the state plane, in some sense, this radius kind of models the energy of the system, right? It's saying what my maximum current is, what my maximum voltage is, depending on the angle that determines the distribution of energy between the inductor and capacitance. And then in the normalized form, this radius tells me how much energy is in that resonance. Okay. If I have non-infinite Q, so I do have a lossy system, what's going to happen is as it rings, that radius is going to reduce, as I'm reducing the energy in the system. And rather than this circle just spinning around, what I'll get is a spiral. That would kind of spiral in, and after enough cycles, it would never overlap itself like that. That's just bad drawing. But it would steadily decrease and spiral down until eventually it ends up at the DC operating point once all the ringing energy is lost. It's a good thing to know if you, for example, were measuring this characteristic experimentally, you would see that radius steadily decreasing according to the Q of your system. Practically, if we start taking this into account, a lot of the benefit of state plane falls apart. But with multi-resonant, once these things are not circles, this is just some other way of plotting our time domain waveforms. Only when we make these assumptions and they're nice circles that we have good analytical techniques to solve all these things. What's theta to here on a steadily decreasing radius spiral? We don't have that knowledge. But arc length, angles, triangles on circles, we know these things. Okay, so then we started an analysis of the synchronous buck converter. We started with the time domain waveform and reduced our synchronous buck converter to an equivalent circuit during the switching dead times. So when both M1 and M2 are off and neither of the body diodes are conducting, we really just have whatever capacitance is present at this switch node It's going to ring with the inductor, and our output looks more or less like a DC voltage source, under the assumption that we've designed this thing as a DC to DC converter with relatively small ripple at the output. If it's relatively small over one switching period, it's going to be very small during one dead time. And we looked at the state plane just for one transition, really, the M2 turn off. This is the case where the low side device turns off. That is right here. And solved that transition, sketched on the state plane for some initial conditions. Went through and solved the ZVS condition of that transition, which told us that we needed to go to negative enough of a current such that our radius R was greater than this distance, 1 minus M, so that we could ring around and reach ZVS. And here, related to the earlier question, sometimes write this as M1's body diode turns on when I get here and reach ZVS. And ideally, if I was perfect, that body diode would never turn on. I'd time it out so that M1, the switch itself, hits threshold right at this point and turns on. And I never have any body diode conduction. Practically, I just try to time it pretty close and have very small interval of any diode conduction here. So what I want to pick up now is finishing the solution of the synchronous buck converter, sketching out the complete state plane for a full period of it, and then solving that state plane to solve the average output current, solve the behavior of the circuit. Okay. So I copied the waveforms that I drew earlier on the side here, so we can kind of compare time domain versus state plane as we go through. And I've got some dashed lines here to assist my drawing skills. I'm sketching the M sub C, J sub L state plane, where M sub C is my switch node voltage, and J sub L is my inductor current, both normalized. Okay. And we're going to have two resonant intervals during the two switching dead times. In both cases, the equivalent circuit's going to look the same. I'm going to have C switch, L, and V. The only difference is going to be my initial condition. Okay. So I'm going to go through and I'm going to label these intervals 1, 2 for the dead time, 3, 4 for this dead time, so that I can show the corresponding segments over here on the state plane. And I'm going to start with subinterval 4, which is the one that we've been sketching so far. Okay. So that one starts. It's a resonant subinterval. It starts somewhere down here at some negative current. We called that I naught previously. I'm going to change my notation a little bit because we're going to have two different subintervals. So I naught might be a bit confusing. I'm going to call this I3 for the current at the end of this interval 3. Okay. And in that vein, I'm going to label this minus I4, this I1, and this I2. Okay. So this subinterval 4, we know I start here at what is now minus J3. My DC solution is here at M on the M sub C axis. And I'm going to resonate over here to 1. I'm going to sketch this as though we've designed it so that it can obtain ZVS. So we've satisfied the ZVS condition from the previous lecture. So that state plane segment looks like a radius here. Call this R4 for the radius starting ringing in this interval 4. And I'm going to resonate around the circle over here until I hit this 1 on the normalized state plane, as until my switch node voltage rings up to VG, at which point we'll have this same M1. Basically, the high side switch turns on. Depending on my timing, that's either the body diode or the FET channel itself. Okay. So this is my interval 4. I have this same radius, R4, and I'm going to give a name to this angle here. I'm going to call this theta. So after that, I am in subinterval 1 as I've drawn this. I need to draw a little bit more of a segment here for subinterval 1. But I drew this a little bit off kilter, but I'll start from this minus I4, and then I'm going to ramp up linearly to I1. This is now a linear subinterval. The switch node voltage is locked at VG. I'm not going to see M sub C change at all. I'm going to see the current go from what is my minus J4 up to whatever value J1. Okay. And I put this arc in here, so I drew J1 there, but the height that it goes to depends on this time, right? Which was DTS in my normal buck converter. I'm just going to call it some T1. Okay. So my inductor current is going to increase without any change in switch node voltage, moving in this direction on the state plane. And it's going to keep going until I turn off that high side device. Okay. Everybody with me so far? Okay. So when I shut off the high side device, I'm going to go back to this resonant circuit. Right? The difference is going to be just my initial condition. Now my initial conditions are V sub C is VG. So let's see, for subinterval 2, my ICs are V sub C, and I sub L is equal to I1. And as we've seen a few times now, the important thing here is the polarity of this inductor current has changed, right? Previously, it was negative, and we wanted the voltage to rise up. Now it's positive. We want the voltage to drop down. We're trying to get VG to resonate, or V switch to resonate down from VG to zero, so that we can turn on the low side device with zero voltage. So my initial conditions are really just describing that I'm at this point, the center of my resonance. The circuit hasn't changed, so that DC is the same. So my radius is going to be here. We'll call this R2. I said we're in subinterval 2. And I'm going to resonate in this direction, hopefully, all the way down to zero voltage. I'm going to name this angle alpha. There's no significance to alpha and beta, just picking Greek letters. Yeah.
I just want to, for clearing sake, is this the whole system, is it describing voltage and current around one device?
This is, so we're describing the entire converter now, okay? We have, by making the transition from this circuit to this state plane, I have eliminated the DC solution on this capacitor, right? So if I want to know what the voltage is on that device, I'm going to need to say it's VG minus whatever voltage I said was on this equivalent capacitor. So I need to add that information back in if I wanted to plot its voltage from the state plane. But we're net modeling the entire converter. Functionally, we're modeling whatever is going on with these two elements, but that's giving us the behavior of this entire converter. Right? If I know IL, I can sketch out full time domain waveforms. I know all the details of it. I know output power. I know output voltage for a given load. I know switching period. I know everything about this converter. Okay. So there's a little bit of information that's not in there, but it's stuff that we can just, by inspection, add back in. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. It's on the axis, on the state plane. The current is the current of the system.
Current is the inductor current. So it is IL and V switch become M sub C and J sub L.
Those are the two that are normalized in the state plane.
Right. Okay. So same thing we've been doing so far. The difference is now I'm not just looking at one switching transition alone and letting it ring out. I'm looking at actually the complete converter waveforms over a period. Okay. All right. So this one we've looked at before. This one is new to add, but these linear intervals are pretty simple. Just current changing, voltage staying the same. This is now my other switching transition. Looked at M2 off, this is now M1 off. And what I found is that based on the way I sketched this, I can achieve zero voltage switching, right? So going back here, what do I want? So when we looked at the M2 off subinterval, I was turning off M2. After a short dead time, I want to turn on M1. So what I want to happen in my resonance is I want V switch to go from zero all the way up to VG, at which point the drain to source voltage on M1 will be VG minus VG will be zero, turn on with zero voltage. Same thing in the opposite direction now. I've got M1 on, my switch node voltage is at VG, I shut it off. What I really want is for my switch node voltage to drop down to zero. Then I can turn on M2 with zero voltage across it. I'm going to eliminate COSS loss, eliminate overlap during turn on, get all these nice characteristics out of it. Okay. So on my state plane, what I found is, as I've drawn it, that can happen. Right? So that's this transition up top. I shut off M1. My system will resonate, dropping the switch node voltage down to zero. At this point, I can do M2 body diode or FET on both of these on the mark. Have zero voltage switching or turn on with zero volts across them. These nice low loss turn on transitions. About this one, M1 turn off. Well, it depends, right? These are the ones we've looked at. If my gate is much faster than my drain is rising, I can get it to be nice slow loss. If I have a very slow gate driver, I might get overlap type loss with that transition. Okay. Okay. So I haven't kept up on sketching. So this was my, that was a label for the axis here. This is also my subinterval one. This is my subinterval two. The last one, my subinterval three, is again just a linear subinterval. My switch node voltage is locked at zero, so M sub C will stay zero. And my inductor current is ramping down from I2 to minus I3. That'll be ramping down from J2 to minus J3. My state plane is going to move this direction. So what I have is a closed shape on the state plane, which I need to, right? The system's operating in steady state. It's periodic. I have to come around, end up at the same point. So this is what one full period of the synchronous buck converter under some assumptions of what the operating mode is looks like plotted on the state plane. Okay. A couple things we can do with this. First, I want to look at the ZVS conditions for each of these switching intervals. They're clearly satisfied on this plot, but as I reduce power, as I shrink this thing and change element values, we might not always have ZVS. I'm going to try to fit them in down here. So we have two places where we get ZVS. Okay. This one we've analyzed previously, right? What I needed out of this subinterval is I needed a J3 large enough such that this radius, when I swing it around, will get me all the way to one, right? So my condition there in subinterval four was that R4 is greater than 1 minus M. This radius will get me this distance or more. R4 greater than or equal to 1 minus M. And that's what we had back here. A little bit different notation now that I'm plotting the whole thing. And we can say R4 is J3 squared plus M squared. Square root of that. We can plug in and denormalize and do all those things. I'm just going to leave it at that. Okay. What about subinterval two? So for this transition, what's my ZVS condition? R2 greater than M. Right. I need this radius to be large enough such that in the limit, if I resonate all the way down to where I'm perpendicular to this M sub C axis, it's this distance or greater. Any shorter, and it'll resonate down and never quite get to zero. So I can never get true zero voltage switching. We haven't done this one before. Maybe I'll plug in. R2, I can now write equations for what it is based on a triangle over here on the left and a triangle over here on the right. Generally, it behooves me to write the ZVS condition in terms of the initial conditions of the circuit. That's what I want to know is I'm just letting it resonate. How high does J1 need to be for me to get there rather than J2, which if J2 exists, I've already achieved ZVS, right? So I'm going to write R2 in terms of what's over here. I'm going to get R2 is square root of J1 squared plus 1 minus M squared greater than or equal to M. And we'll just leave it at that. I could square both sides, FOIL this out, have an M squared cancel. But I'm confident you guys can handle that algebra. Okay. So now we have the state plane. It's provided us some benefit in analyzing these EVS transitions, solving for conditions to make sure we have EVS. But we can do a little bit more with it. So what I'm going to do is now completely solve this state plane, solve for expressions for all of the radii, all of these angles, alpha and beta. Plug in, and we're going to get a set of equations that effectively solve our circuit. System of equations that'll give us I1, I2, I3, I4, and the times of each interval. Because these times are coming into play, I'm going to formally denote this here. I'm going to call T1, this T2, T3, T4 for the times of each of these four intervals. Okay. So as we go through and solve this, I'm going to go interval by interval and write all the equations I can get out of the behaviors of the circuit. Okay. So for subinterval 1, this is this interval here. This is a linear subinterval. I don't get a lot out of the state plane, just some line. Instead, what I'm going to do is start from the time domain equations and normalize them. I'm going to normalize them so that they'll mesh well with my state plane equations in a moment. Okay. So the behavior of this circuit during subinterval 1, show with the current waveform, it does something like this, going from minus I4 to I1. In this buck converter, it's got a constant slope the whole time of VG minus V over L. And the total duration of this is what I've just named T1. All clear? So my equation describing the operation of this, write an equation for what T1 is. It's going to look like VG minus V over L times T1. My slope times time is the delta I. That looks like I1 plus I4. Okay. Then I'm going to normalize this by multiplying both sides by 1 over I base. As a reminder, I didn't bring that here. We had selected V base is VG, I base is VG over R naught. Same ones we've been using in the previous lecture. Okay. So I multiply both sides by I base. Over here on the right, I'm just going to get J1 and J4. Normalized versions of I1 and I4. Over here on the left, I'll have VG minus V over L times T1 times I base is VG over R naught. So 1 over I base is R naught over VG. And break this apart as R naught over L times VG minus V over VG times T1, the J1 plus T2 J4. So this R0 over L is equal to root L by C switch over L, which get this L under the radical, I'll have to square it. I'll have root L over C switch L squared. One L will cancel and I'll have one over root LC. Which is omega naught. All right. So this becomes omega naught times T1. Omega naught T is an angle in our state plane. I'm going to give that a name, just theta 1, where theta 1 is equal to omega naught T1. And then this VG minus V over VG, I get 1 minus M, right? V over VG. Okay. And this is the equation contributed by this subinterval. At the moment, it doesn't give us much. M might be set. I've got a VG and V defined for my converter, but theta 1, J1, J4, I don't know yet. We need more equations. Let's move on to subinterval 2, which is this one up here. This is our first resonant subinterval. In general, these resonant subintervals are going to yield two equations. One for the angle, which is going to correlate to the time of this resonance to get from starting point to final point. And then one where I'm going to relate the two radii, relating the two Pythagorean theorem triangles. And that's going to give me a relation on J1 and J2. Okay. So I write my equations for R2 radius during this resonance. I can write two equations. Here on the right, it's J1 squared plus 1 minus M squared. R2 squared, J1 squared plus 1 minus M squared. Over on the left, J1 squared plus M squared. J2, thank you. I'm going to combine these together. Get an equation. Looks like this. Okay. Then for this angle here, alpha. There are a lot of different ways I can express this. Using trigonometry, I go with kind of a law of sines, law of cosine. I'm going to take the easy way out and I'm going to express it as pi minus this angle minus this angle. And I'm going to do both of those as arctangents. It's going to be pi minus arctangent J1 over 1 minus M, pi minus arctangent J2 over M. Not two pi's. You got me. Yeah.
So, sorry, this is not for you. So, right next to the radius circle of the tube, you have R sub 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you have R listed as both J plus M and J plus 1 minus M.
Mm-hmm.
On the previous page, you defined R sub 4 and R sub 2. Is that saying you can, are you looking at both of the, like, on the next page, are you looking at R sub 2 in both instances on this state plane? Okay. Yeah. I was just making sure I understood what you're doing.
Yeah. So the two equations are just the Pythagorean theorem for the hypotenuse of this hypotenuse of this triangle, and for the hypotenuse of this triangle.
So on the circle right here, you can define R2 in two ways.
Yeah.
So you've only read one.
Right.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
The problem is, what's going to happen? The reason I chose this one. So let me sketch here what would happen. I'm going to go in yellow, which is going to be hard to see, but I'm trying to not destroy my plot here. So let's say I don't get ZVS. What happened is my J1 is too small. So I resonate around and end up somewhere here. Right? So this thing that tells me J1 needs to be this large, that's going to kind of hold. And I'm going to find that this J1 was smaller than this constraint. If I write it in terms of J2, what's going to happen is that equation is going to have no solution now. It'll still tell you, okay, it's not getting ZVS, but I kind of prefer something where J1 still exists, here's how big it needs to be, versus J2, it's defined as when this state plane hits this axis, so it's only really defined for soft switching. So you could write it, it would work equally well. I just chose to write it this way. Okay, so my alpha is writing as pi minus arctan J1 over 1 minus M minus arctan J2 over M. Okay, so that's what I get out of subintervals 1 and 2. I'm going to do the same thing for subintervals 3 and 4. 3 is, again, a linear subinterval. Equations are really going to look the same here. The only difference is going to be the currents involved and the voltage. So it's going to be, instead of Vg minus V over L, when the high side device is on, now the low side device is on, it's going to be minus V over L. And then my current limits are going to be going from I2 down to I3, minus I2 plus I3, moving in the negative direction. If I normalize this, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to multiply by 1 over I base on both sides. I'm going to get J2 plus J3 over here. I'm going to get an omega naught T3 over there, and then a V over VG. This is going to look like eliminating my negative signs. M theta 3 is equal to J2 plus J3, really by the same process as before. And then subinterval 4, another resonant interval. I'm going to again relate my R4 squared. That's going to be J3 squared plus M squared, J4 squared plus 1 minus M squared. And then my beta angle down here, same thing, pi minus 2 arctans. This will be pi minus arctan of J3 over, oops, sorry, I don't know why there was a 2 there, over M minus arctan of J4 over 1 minus M. You're right. It fell down. Okay. Moving quickly. The last thing I'm going to do, so now I have all of these disparate equations and they're describing the individual subintervals. What I really want to solve this converter is something like the output current. Okay. I'll assume that my input voltage, my output voltage are known. I want to know for a given set of switching waveforms, for a given design, how much output power do I get? What's the average output current? So I want to write an equation for average high out over switching period. Call this capital I out. For a buck converter, the average output current is equal to the average inductor current over switching period, which I define as 1 over TS, or a TS of IL dt. Right. So, looking at my inductor current here, I can solve that integral for each of these four subintervals. I'm going to split this up. I out is equal to 1 over TS times integral from 0 to T1 of IL dt plus integral from T1 to T2 IL dt plus all four of them. Okay. And then I'm going to evaluate these individually. Okay, so over T1 is an even better plot of it. The average value of the current during this subinterval, I can say the integral of the current is what I'm solving. The average value of the current is really just the average of I1 and minus I4, right? And the integral will be that average value times the time. So this is going to look like I1 minus I4 over 2, average value times time, T1. Okay. So that is subinterval 1. I'm going to have my four subintervals in here, the integral of each. Do 3 next, because it's the same kind of thing. 3 is, again, the linear subinterval going from I2 to minus I4. So the integral of that will be This was 1 went from J1 to J4, 2 goes from J2 to minus J3, excuse me. Okay, now the resonant subintervals. So what is the integral under the curve here? And there's an easy way and a not so easy way. Okay. So not so easy way, we know it's a resonance. I can take my solution for the initial and final conditions, denormalize them, know that it's a sinusoid and that the values are going to scale according to V base and I base, then run the integral of that sinusoid. Another option is to figure out, okay, during this subinterval, all of the inductor current is going into the cap. What is the integral of inductor current? Charge. And if all of the current goes into this cap, then it means over that the integral is equal to the charge supplied to that cap. What is the charge supplied to that cap? However much charge needed to go from VG down to zero. So this is actually a negative charge in subinterval 2. I'll call it negative QC. Subinterval 4, how much charge, however much charge it took to go from 0 up to VG, positive QC. And these things are going to cancel out. Russian, I wanted to make it through this derivation before the end of class. I didn't make it. We'll pick up here next class. We're going to normalize this into the state plane, and then I'll show some simulations of using this to actually solve converter operations. Okay. We'll see you Wednesday.